Welcome to the Be Inspired podcast and our Growing Beyond series, talking to industry leaders across Australia about how the built environment is at the moment, looking how it's going to develop and the challenges and the opportunities ahead. So Felicity, thank you so much for joining us today from NH.
Pleasure. Great to be here.
Lovely. Now, Felicity, do you want to tell us a little bit about your role and NH first, just to sort of kick off?
Sure. I'm Managing Director at NH Architecture. Based in Melbourne, we have studios in Tasmania, Brisbane, and in South Australia also.
Yeah, and that's actually been quite a new evolution as well. So firstly, let's start with a bit about your history and how you sort of got to where you are today and your journey as well. Why did you want to study architecture or do architecture in the first place?
I think the thing that got me wanting to study architecture was my mum had a ballet studio in a beautiful Georgian building in one of Dublin's famous Georgian streets. And we had a studio in the basement of a grand Georgian house.
Oh,
and
wow.
An American couple living above renovating it in the 80s in Ireland. It was fascinating to me. And yeah, that's kind of what ignited my love of architecture.
And it's quite funny because obviously in the UK and Europe, you know, I mean, there's centuries and centuries of buildings and the architecture is a lot of that heritage and, you know, adapting readaptions into things. And then obviously Australian market, there is a little bit of that, but most of it is actually building new buildings. So why did you end up coming to Australia? Tell us a bit about that.
Also my father used to work abroad, and being the youngest of the family, I was keen to take on a global role. So me and my partner at the time decided to try Australia, the furthest point after the GFC in the UK. So we arrived here in 2010. And I was lucky enough to get a position with BBN Architecture pretty much straight away. And it just changed my enthusiasm for the profession. It was, you know, a complete refresh of how I thought about things and, you know, refreshing working in such a relatively new architectural company, country as well. So, you know, the heritage stuff is beautiful, but I love that we can have such texture and freedom to design how we want to design for context in Australia as well.
Well, and I think that's a really interesting thing because you bring that international experience as well, but then into the Australian market and, you know, obviously now running a firm that's working across Australia in different sectors. So how do you find, what are the differences, I suppose, the unique approach to architecture in Australia or even Australian architects? Because obviously there's quite a lot of leading Australian firms that have, you know, expanded internationally and have fantastic reputations. What do you think it is?
I think, you know, it might seem trite, but I think what I really enjoyed about the architecture industry when I arrived in Australia was everybody was given a fair go. You know, you had an opportunity to find your niche and not be you know, pigeonholed. I worked at a few practices before I arrived at NH, and I found a unique approach in each different one. So, you know, from practices that really had a particular style to practices that just approached architecture in a particular way, there was a great opportunity to find freedom in that and find the place that was with your home, which I managed to do. Luckily, after a bit of searching, I found home.
Sometimes finding that fit. So tell me, what do you think it is then that NH, what is the unique approach that NH takes to architecture and its clients?
Well, I think in particular, you know, we're 21 years old now. We have, you know, not as long a lineage as many other practices, but we keep finding ourselves back in the complex projects, and people trust us to pull things apart and find the right route through across all the sectors that we work in. And we enjoy that variety, and we also think that our projects benefit from the variety of the sectors that we work across as well. So you will always have an expert available to inform, you know, a health project with, you know, a retail expert if required, and so on and so on.
So what are the main sectors that NH is working in and can really optimize
on? So we're in health, resi, residential, arts and culture. We also work in mixed use. We do master planning. We touch nearly every sector available and cross-pollinate between all of those.
Mm. And I suppose, what are some of the significant projects that NH has been involved in that people may or may not know about?
I think, you know, historically, probably QV in Melbourne. It was a benchmark of how we worked in a city and a whole city block, and how we could felt that working with collaborators on that project would really give a great palette to the architecture as well as how it sits in the city. We've also worked on Melbourne Park from its stage 2 and 3 master plans and delivered 3 venues, both by ourselves and in collaboration with other architects there also. And another significant one that we're working on at the moment is the reimagining of the Art Centre in Melbourne also.
Very exciting. Very exciting. And I mean, I think that really speaks to, I think if anybody is familiar with your brand or has looked on your website, has an idea of your projects, you know, you have a great design ethos, you know, your design is beautiful, but at the same time, you are actually exceptionally lovely people. And I think that's the other thing as well, is that, you know, it's that old theory, isn't it? Sometimes there's the beautiful designers, but they're actually not the easiest people to work with and get along. Is that sort of part of NH's culture and approach to things as well?
Absolutely. I think it's just as, like, you know, I talk about it a lot, is, you know, you need to find your tribe, the people that you can work with. And it's so important to be able to communicate with each other and trust each other. And you get the best project outcomes when, you know, you can communicate not just with your team, but with your client, and extrapolate exactly what they need into built form. It's a wonderful way to work, and we all appreciate that, the people that work with NH.
Yeah, and I think it is one of those things. At the end of the day, a project can be look fantastic, but it can get very, very complex if everybody isn't rowing in the same direction and working together. And, you know, that's just as important, being able to work with the right consultants, you know, your project managers, everybody else, the builders involved. And that's really where I see that, you know, profitability on projects can go out the window very quickly if everybody isn't working, collaborating together in the right way, or get quite complex when it doesn't really need to be as well. All right, excellent. So, talk to us a little bit about, I suppose, you've obviously evolved from, you know, being a graduate to then leading projects. Can you tell us a little bit about your career and how you sort of found you progressed within your skills and approach to things, and some advice for those coming up through the ranks?
Well, I actually started in interior design and then moved across to architecture, which I actually think is, you know, it benefits me throughout my career, and it was great to see both sides. So I would always encourage people to, whatever stage of your career, go out and study something different to your core discipline as well. It's great to be able to see those perspectives. I studied in the UK. It's a slightly different system to what you'll find in Australia, but there was great opportunities to work throughout, and I made the best of that by working throughout the second half of my graduate diploma. And I think that's getting a real world ear whilst you're doing your projects for your master's or your graduate diploma is so valuable, and sets you up well for when you, you know, graduate and are looking for that first role, to have that experience behind you really helps with getting those positions. So wherever possible, if you can work while studying, yeah. I know it's difficult, but I find it a huge benefit to myself.
Well, and I think it's one of those things, lots of people, it's a bit of both. You know, if you can get that ideal, you can find somewhere you're working part-time. I find the people who have been the students, even when you look at their folio, at the end of the day, those who are just studying full-time and not working or working in the industry, you can spend infinite amount of time just on your projects and doing that on your designs. Whereas I think what happens is that commerciality at the end of the day, we are designing, but you can't design forever. You are learning the practical skills to be able to put a building together, what needs to be done, how to solve the problem within a certain timeline too.
Yeah, absolutely. And as much as we would all like to be, you know, the designer as an architect, there's so many more facets to being an architect or a design professional within the construction industry. And you need to find your niche. You may not be sole designer for the rest of your career. You may end up, you know, being the team leader, the project manager, or, you know, somebody that has a design technical role or a design advocate. All so important, but for a project to run well, large or small, you need to have a variety of those skill sets to ensure that you know, you're going to be a professional with growth throughout your career.
Yeah. And so what do you think are the key skills that, you know, if somebody is starting from graduate versus just the technical types of things that you need to be kind of focusing on and continue to evolve?
Well, I think, you know, design, depending on the university that you're studying at, is, you know, well catered for. But, you know, taking those modules that talk about the realism so that when you do come out of a university or whilst you've been working whilst doing it, you know how a building goes together. It's a very important skill set so that, you know, the design that you're putting forward is, you know,
buildable.
You can cost it, it's yeah. affordable, but also it's buildable as well. And that needs to be thought about right at the inception stage, not just in the delivery and right the way through.
And I mean, that's one of the things, you know, we're always looking for designers who actually get that. You know, anybody can draw, not anybody can draw, but lots of people might be able to draw a pretty picture or it looks great. But at the end of the day, the project will fall over. You know, budgets are there. It has to be financed. It has to actually stack up. You need to actually be able to build it. So I know we're always looking for designers who understand how it goes together. And I think, I mean, as you said, it's a slightly different process in the UK to Australia. I think it's I think it's even more intense than the Australian system to get registered in the UK than here. But in essence, I think, you know, often I find people go to university and, you know, they're, especially in Australia, and they're learning all the design. And there's some universities where you go, can I see you? Do you know how you use Revit? Can you document? They don't learn any of that. And you're like, okay, we're going to have to teach you that for the first 5 years. You've just gone to uni for 5 years and learned how to design. But at the end of the day, we actually need to be able to build the buildings, not create something that's imaginary, and what we can actually do for that. And I think that's the first 5 years I often find, or 10 years, people are learning that technical skill. How does the building go together? What are the different construction modes? Building that technical base. And then as they evolve, then starting to get into more leading people and working with other consultants and coordinating that, and then starting to understand that there's actually a fee, that we can't, you know, spend 100 hours on something. We've only got a fee for 10 hours. That's an exaggeration, a minutiae, I should say. But, and then evolving that into actually leading projects and then going out and winning work. Has that been a bit of your evolution, or what did you find as you went through?
Yes, I think it was. And I think it varied throughout the various different practices that I had the experience of working at. And I think, you know, with architecture, a lot of the time, you know, it's about the extra skill sets that you can provide yourself to set yourself ahead, whether it be, you know, from Revit to Rhino or Grasshopper. A lot of people have evolved those when they're at junior, you know, in side courses, etc. And all of that additional evolution that helps you with the doing and being able to hit the ground running sets yourself apart from, you know, yeah. the next person. So I think also getting into the industry and attending events is very important as well, because you tend to meet people I tend to find that construction people are very generous with their time about ensuring that people can get intel on what might be a growth area for them, or events to attend where they might meet someone, whether it be they end up on the architecture side or the builder side, or for a developer, there's many different streams that architecture as a profession or as a degree will set you up well to work just in construction in general.
Well, and I think that's the thing, really. I mean, that's the great thing for architects. You've got that ability to do architecture. You know, I spoke to somebody the other day who went down the development track and side of that, and then being able to, that is a leap. You know, often people try and make that leap a bit more senior in their career, and it's a bit harder because you've got to understand it's actually the economics making the project stack up. Or going down the project manager side, or going on the builder side as the design manager. So we often see there is an evolution for people outside of purely architecture in itself. But obviously in an architecture firm, you know, we often talk about this, you know, this professional services firm. It is a bit more like a triangle. You know, you come in as a graduate, you evolve into that, you have your technical people, and then you will have people who evolve on. What you're talking about is the relationships we build in projects and the relationships that we build to meet other people. You know, it's that old thing, if you took that when you were a graduate or a mid, it's about meeting people and going out there and going to networking events, but at the same time, still cultivating those relationships and making sure. And then I would say, you know, once you're starting to get up to that more upper lens, then it's about being able to put that strategic lens on it too. So you're maintaining your relationships, but then understanding how to optimize those to be able to help the business to grow and to,
You hit the nail on the head there, Satin. And you know, often the relationships that you're building as a graduate are ones that return dividends when you move up the ranks. So whatever level you're at, it's never too late to start that. And I think being open to hearing about people's challenges, or just having a quick chat and keeping in touch can help, you know, grow your experience. And, you know, if you're looking for new career opportunities in the future, it's a great way to connect to people.
And I mean, I think, and you can tell me your personal view on this and what you found, but I often find that architects or those coming through don't always think about that side of things and the relationships, wherein it is the most important thing. That's how you get things done. But a lot of people often, I mean, I'm obviously a massive extrovert, right? So I can walk into a room and there's that. But a lot of people who may be introverts sort of avoid in doing that and don't do it. So have you got any tips for anybody who doesn't necessarily love doing those types of things?
I'm definitely one of those. I've always found it a challenge, but needs must, of course. And I think some of the tricks that I've learned over the years is just be interested in the person that you're talking to. Everybody is generally there finding it a bit awkward, but if you're interested in a person and what they do and, you know, the projects they're working on, that immediately starts to build a rapport. And although you may not get, you know, an immediate connection out of something like that, just keeping in contact with that person afterwards and growing it is very important. You know, reconnecting with people over the course of your career, whether it be, you know, every 2 months or every couple of years, is a great way to build a network, which is always important to have, whatever profession you work in.
Well, and I must say, obviously, as a director of a company, it is your biggest asset, is your network. That you have all your ability to build your network. Would you agree with that now at this point in your career?
Oh, absolutely. And I think I certainly found it difficult not having been educated in Australia. You know, you come in a little bit later and it takes a while to build that network. But the people that I have met since being here, you know, early days to now, which is 16 years in July, have been super generous about their, you know, sharing their intel and, you know, wanting the best for each other on the way along. And I think if you're decent with helping people out, then it comes back in dividends later.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things. I think, you know, if you're a good person at heart and you want to help people and actually, you know, to, as you said, I think the best advice you've had there is it is about genuine interest in people and what they want to do. I think often people enter into a room and think, I've got to sell what I do. That's not what you're there to do. You're actually there to find out from them, what is it that who are you? You know, I never actually like talking about what I do. I just like understanding what other people are doing, what they're working on. And you know, it's quite interesting because you never know what you've worked on as a project. Or, you know, if you're a graduate, we often used to run with the graduate programs. It's really important to connect with other people who might be the engineers or might be the project coordinators, and understanding what they do and the challenges that they face and what helps them, because they're on their journey and learning too. And even whether you're on a project or not, you've always got that person you potentially call up and say, hey, I've just got this. Have you ever come across this before? How would you approach that? Those relationships I find are fruitful and continue on in doing that. Yeah, same type of things. So let's talk about the industry. Obviously, it's 2026. We're at the quarter one for the calendar year into this. We're recording this in January. It's about to kind of slowly take off. Now you work across multiple states as well. What do you see are the biggest challenges for the industry at present?
Well, look, it's definitely been choppy for the last 6 months. I think we've fared pretty well through that. But I think it was important for us to recognise, although we were a Melbourne studio who had always worked across Australia and New Zealand, we were finding more when we were branching out into the other states that people really appreciated having the local knowledge. And, you know, although we had the expertise, they trust people that are from the area and, you know, have that local knowledge and connection. So we quickly saw that and decided to grow offshoots of studios into Tasmania, South Australia and Brisbane. And it has worked and grown quicker than we hoped for, which is wonderful. You know, we enjoy working across all these states. And we enjoy having new members of the team not based in in one spot. So it works well as a business model. And it's also working well on the new project wins, which is exactly what we were aiming for.
And how are you finding that across the different states? Now you're working across at least four states.
Well, look, they're a bit different. They're all very different and have their unique working styles and their particular networks. And, you know, we can see why that was the right move of hiring local people with local knowledge and focused in those states. So it's been working well, and people are appreciating having the expertise from the larger practice. Yeah. Often are at the moment satellite studios, and you know, they're growing as we speak.
It's kind of like you get the best of both worlds. You have a more personal, smaller studio, but with the backing and experience of having worked on very large projects. And I suppose it's also that for architecture firms, it's also that culture of design, right? You know, we talked about that. It's not just what it looks in a pretty picture. It's actually that design is excellence all the way through. And I think that's something that you guys are known for, is having a design, but making sure it is delivered and that it can actually be built as well. I suppose how, obviously, the biggest challenge most people are finding in the industry is obviously being able to get projects built, right? Which is two sides to a coin. Obviously, finance is one of those, but probably the biggest thing is making projects stack up with buildability. Is that something that you've noticed as well?
Look, construction costs have definitely gone up. A lot of our clients that we have been working with are a bit more tentative about the work that they're doing. You know, things that were due to come online are pausing, are taking more care about as they move through milestones, etc., ensuring that they have their, you know, finance in place to do that. Yes, people are more tentative about the work that they're doing. I think our approach to how we deal with that, we, as I mentioned before, we have very large projects, but we also have balanced that with a lot of smaller projects, which helps with contingency planning and our resourcing levels as well. So whereas we would have had in our previous iterations, much larger projects on, we now have a balance of both, which is very important.
And enables you to keep that real core team, right? You know, you often see that with very large organizations. They'll have all these big projects and then suddenly they'll drop. And, you know, they're dropping such large percentages or such large members. I mean, that's always it. The ideal is to have big enough projects that you know you've got enough in the pipe, but also to be able to have call it the rats and mice, or the smaller projects that have a quicker turnaround. And you know, obviously interiors is a very key part to that from a cash flow point of view and owning an architecture firm. But it's great also for people, for talent too, and professionals, because they get to work on really great big projects. But if you're in a hospital, that can be 3 or 4 years of just like slogging it, right? To then be able to have a bit of diversity to work on a quick project, get that kind of quick turnaround out of it as well. Is that something you find is also beneficial?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's core to how we try and develop our people here and you know, the opportunities of being a, you know, a general practice that does all of the sectors is that we can give people opportunity to expand their experience both on the large and the small. And we listen, we have, you know, our development discussions every year. We talk about, you know, the person's aspirations as well as how the practice sees their idea of them developing as well. So there's a lot of consideration going into that. We do a lot of mentorship. The people that are here and feel like they're in their tribe you know, do get what they want out of their career. So, you know, we're very proud of that. We put a lot of effort into that. You know, it works well for us.
Yeah. And how do you, I suppose you've just talked about that, finding that tribe. What is, I suppose, how do you describe the NH culture and what you look for in a person?
Well, I think, you know, when, you know, I talk to the people about it, our people about it, it's really just, you know, it feels like you're working with good people. Yeah. You can rely on anybody to rock up to their desk if you have a question and ask them a question. They'll give you their time. They're actually interested in helping you out. And, you know, we have various different people with various different inflections of expertise. Mm. And each one of those are very generous with their time. We also invest a lot in our people through our graduate programs. Recently, our leadership programs. So, you know, ensuring that people are growing and not just staying still and their aspirations are being met, whether it be sector or technical experience. We find people are happy when they're growing.
Absolutely. And it sounds like you've got the right mix there. What you're talking about is a culture where, you know, you're approachable. It sounds like, you know, there's all these words at the moment, psychological safety, and there's trust amongst each other as people. But it's, I mean, and it's one of those things, it's like when it's working well, it's very easy. When it's not working well, it feels hard. And I think, you know, you've got that description of it being a tribe and, you know, we're here to help each other. We're here to help people and our clients and to reach good outcomes as well. So that sounds absolutely fantastic. And obviously, you know, that's, it's been lovely to get to know you too in the same way. And I think that really speaks for it as a leader, you know, having that approachable approach, being a good person. right? Being somebody that people actually want to work with. And it sounds like that's what you're really creating at NH as a culture in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we actually do care about the people that work here, and we want the people that work here to want to work here.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing act. Construction is a difficult industry to work in, and architecture also. So it's definitely a balancing act. But you, when you know you're working with people who are approachable and you know, keen for your growth, then it feels like people are happy doing that hard stuff.
So let's go back to the industry. Obviously, you know, there is challenges going on in the Australian market at the moment. And a lot of that is, as we've talked around, construction costs. What do you see of some of the opportunities?
Oh, well, there's many, I think, and we're certainly looking towards the Olympics, and Queensland's growth there is, you know, exponential. Alongside that, there's some challenges with delivery of those, but, you know, what a great opportunity for, you know, the nation as well as Queensland to be expanding that wonderful place that is, you know, a wonderful place to live and grow. And we really enjoy having done sports and continue to do those. So we hope to be a part of that, whether it be in sports or one of the adjacent projects that comes up alongside that. I think, you know, people need to see your value, particularly at the moment, and your particular skill set. So it's, you know, when you are out there in competitive bids, it's really people understanding the value of what you do as an architect. You know, there are many great architecture practices out there.
Yeah.
And it's often about the client getting the right fit for them, which, you know, can be a challenge for how it's balanced, given out to particular architects.
Mm.
But I think if you find an alignment and you're doing quality work, you not only can win the new, but you can keep your existing as well. It's a huge, you know, business development opportunity is just doing the work well and getting clients to come back and repeat working with you.
Which, win the work, do a good job, you get the next project. So it's always that part of building those new relationships, but maintaining and delivering on the projects that you've got at the moment too. So in regards to, I suppose, the next 10 to 20 years, we've seen the emergence of things like AI coming in, which might be more on the operational side at the moment. But, you know, we would be predicting that that will continue to evolve on more of the other side. How are you guys integrating and using that and see the opportunity in development?
Well, I think we're not the earliest adopters of it, but we are in a trial at the moment. And, you know, for me, I want to focus on the pain points. We're certainly looking at, you know, how it can augment our design. But really, it's about the operational side that we're focusing on at the moment, how we can be more efficient and help people in the day to day. And, you know, the administrative tasks that take up a lot of our time and away from that thinking is where we're focusing first. And, you know, we're excited about how that can unlock more time for the stuff that you do tend to enjoy doing more. So we're in a 3-month trial with that at the moment. So everybody focusing as part of that trial on different things. So we look to implement beyond that while still investigating on the design side. But
it's still evolving on the design side and even the documentation side. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, once you think about being able to create general rules and stuff like that. I think, you know, we're looking at probably the third year of AI being something that is around and now seeing it. You know, most of that's coming through large language models and what it can do in that. But I think the next evolution of how that's going to look from a BIM perspective to then being able to put in your codes and being able to do that, if we think about it, if AI is going to be doing a lot of repeatable work, as you said, it will hopefully take away or reduce the amount of time and documentation. But obviously that presents challenges because most people actually learn how buildings put together or learn how to document by doing that. What do you think is a prediction for the next 10 to 20 years of, you know, what we're going to be training our graduates, or how are we still train things when there can be a lot of things that are, you know, the AI slop can be produced as well?
Well, I think, you know, you could, and it just popped into my head now, you could look at history, you know, when you moved from the drawing board to the computer, there were roles lost, from going from the drawing board to the computer. I think there will always be opportunities to get in and grow. And actually, the people that are most proficient in technology are our newer graduates.
Yeah.
So, you know, it upends the balance that the generations that have grown up with technology and, you know, more recent years AI will be more proficient and, you know, really the instigators that we need in the industry to be able to help to drive us less generations that are a bit older and, you know, didn't grow with that in their career. It will be a good balance. So you've got the strategic foresight of, people in their latter stages of career, but also people that can get cut through the...
I would say, it, and I'm not assuming your age, but let's say over that you've probably... How long have you been in architecture for?
I've been in architecture for 26 years.
Yeah. So in that time, you know, there was still, I know people in their careers, maybe a bit further in their careers than you are, who did learn on drawing boards, and then CAD came in, so AutoCAD, and then now into 3D modeling, and now it's, you know, BIM and how can we integrate in, and, you know, now we're talking about AI, and there's lots of things that we can be, I mean, lots of people are using it to sort of save time to be able to provide more options or to help clients to guide that. But I think it'll be very interesting over the next 10 years and how it continues to evolve into an industry. I mean, we obviously, you know, for a lot of Revit users, everybody's kind of at the mercy of one provider and what they're going to do or don't do or charge you to continue to integrate into that. But I think at the end of the day, the things that won't change is working together, the people skills and things like that. What's your thoughts on that?
I really do believe in that, you know, the communication, and we all have our niche, and our particular skill sets, and, you know, they have to balance, right? You can't have a team of people that all do the same thing. You need a variety to, you know, do good architecture, build good buildings, work with consultants. We need the variety to be able to test our ideas. And get things built, and, you know, working from not only the architecture side but the construction side, there's, you know, huge technical evolution happening on that side as well. So, you know, we'll see it both on the design side and the construction side. I think I'm excited for it.
I think it will be. I think, you know, I mean, the industry has gone through a large evolution over the last 20 years. It'll be another evolution over the next 20 years. And, you know, construction technology continuing to increase. We've obviously just gone through COVID, although that was 5 years ago. I think, you know, it still feels like it wasn't that long ago. You know, how things like that can potentially impact on the supply. We're obviously working in a very volatile international situation at the moment, and that will have an effect. But, I mean, we're very, very lucky in Australia that we have our own economy that we can support. Yes, we import a lot of supply and materials, but we are also, you know, not hamstrung, or, you know, we're in our country and we can have people, you know, ship things here without having to come through other borders. And so we are in a very fortunate position. As you said, you moved here when the GFC was happening, which did affect Australia, probably maybe not to the same extent as Europe and the UK may have felt. And we'll have our own economic, you know, impacts, but kind of being that, I suppose, that middle child of not too big, but not too small. There's enough within the market. I think the great thing about in Australia too, and it'll be interesting how you see, is that, as you said, everybody was given and is given a chance. It's kind of this country of innovation and thinking about things. And I think that gives hopefully Australian architects and designers an ability to come and approach things from different points of view. How do you find that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, how we're absolutely, I think you've hit the nail ahead again on the head, working with country and our evolution on that in recent years, and we still are in the foothills, but you know, it's so right that we should be approaching architecture that way, and that is really evolving, you know, Australian architecture in its own unique way for place, for country, for our own unique environment, and you know, listening to those First Nations voices and being guided about how we place our buildings on the land is so important, not just from a built environment perspective, but environmental perspective also. We've still a huge way to go and learning in that, not just in how we build, but how we educate as well.
Yeah.
And it's a really exciting time to be part of the architecture profession and construction, with that view in mind, at the moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's lots of opportunities. Felicity, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, we always ask at the end, is there a book, podcast, or anything that you sort of follow or listen to that you think would be worthwhile for people getting their heads around?
Caught me off guard a bit there. Yeah, I think I like, from a business perspective, I listen to the Inc. podcast. It's from Fast Company.
That's right.
It's a really quite quick way to get, you know, career growth insights.
Yeah, great.
It would be worthwhile checking out.
I'll be writing that one down, and we'll put it in the show notes and things like that too. Excellent. And look, if you are looking to check out NH and find out a bit more, we'll include the details in the show notes as well. Thank you, Felicity, so much for joining us today and giving your insights into your career, NH itself, and your perspective into the industry.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, Sutton.
Our pleasure. See ya.
Bye.